Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. For today's podcast, we're going to be delving into markets. We're going to be looking at the outlook for the rest of 2025. We're going to be paying particular attention to emerging markets. We're going to be looking at US equities. And of course, we're going to be looking at what the rest of the year could hold in terms of Donald Trump's tariffs. And to do that, we're very kindly joined today by Dan Baldwin-Weston, who is the CEO of BRI Wealth Management. Dan, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Jonathan, afternoon. How are you doing?
Yes, very, very well. Very well. We spoke, I think it was probably at the end of last year. So very much welcoming you back to the podcast, Dan. I'm really looking forward to this conversation. Before we get into it, as usual, we'd like to get an introduction from yourself as well as BRI Wealth Management, please.
Yeah, sure. So I'm Dan, Chief Exec of BRI. I've been with BRI since 2011, predominantly focusing on the investment side of the business, but taking over as Chief Exec in 2022. And then I've been with BRI all of my career, bar 1 year, year out when I went to do an MBA at Warwick Business School. A bit about BRI, we're based in the Midlands. Our offices are just outside of Coventry, but we operate across Derbyshire, Staffordshire, Warwickshire, Worcestershire, Gloucestershire, sort of that big swathe of the Midlands. And we're a full service wealth management company. So financial planning, a lot of cash flow planning, helping clients with pensions, inheritance tax, and also investment management as well. So full service wealth management. And really, I think what we try and set ourselves apart from our peers with is the quality of our advice and the quality of our service. We're by no means the biggest, and we have no desire to be, but we feel like we're the best. But there's always a little bit more we can do.
Thank you very much. And we're going to be delving into some of the thinking behind the advice that you give to your clients today. Dan, we're going to be looking at markets, and we're also going to be exploring what you're advising your clients at the moment. But we're going to start off with a fairly broad look and get your views on global economic growth. So, the first question up here, how do you see things developing? There's been some shakiness in markets so far this year, but we're back at record highs now. So maybe there's a bit of a disconnect between what's happening in markets and what could be happening in the economy going forward. And also, it would be good if you could tie into this, Dan, market sentiment when you're speaking to clients. What are their thoughts? What are their feelings towards market at the moment and any concerns that they may have?
Yeah, sure. I think the growth outlook for the second half of the year does not look good. And a large part of this is that global economies generally were slowing as a result of the significant increase in interest rates we've seen over the last few years. And we've got to remember that the impact of interest rates, it takes some time to filter through the system. The transmission mechanism is lagged. And so we'd already started to see growth in Europe, weakening growth in Europe, weakening growth in the UK, and weakening growth in America. But since Liberation Day, which is the name that seems to be sticking, unfortunately, I think all bets are off. For the second half, this is a significant shock to global growth. Depending on where Trump ends up with his tariffs, we'll see the effective tariff rate in America rise to the highest level in 100 years. And while some progress has been made on some sort of small trade deals, we've had the UK, we've had Vietnam seems to have got a deal overnight, we've got to remember that there's still a baseline tariff for most countries of 10%, which is a big headwind for businesses, but also for the American consumer. And the American consumer contributes sort of 68-70% of GDP, and so it's going to be a big headwind. And so we're relatively negative on the growth outlook for the second half of the year. and I'm sure we'll come on to it, but I think it's somewhat perplexing that some markets, especially like the American stock market, are hitting all-time highs as we speak in the face of this weakening growth outlook. The picture between Wall Street and Main Street looks very different at the moment.
With that growth outlook, you know, not looking particularly rosy at the moment, Dan, there is an element of resilience coming in. And of course, investors and market commentators will always talk about the FTSE 100 and its resilience due to the defensive nature of the index. But looking a little bit further afield into Europe and indeed some emerging markets, there seem to be some traction gaining there. Is that something that you agree with as well? Is that something that you may be positioning towards for your clients?
Yeah, yes, very, very much so. We've seen the benefits of diversification this year for the first time in quite some time. The only game in town really has been for the last few years is America and American technology. But gains have been a lot broader this year. And you're right, especially focused around Europe and certain parts of emerging markets. So, you know, the DAX in Germany is up the best part of 20% so far this year. And the dollar weakness has clearly been a tailwind to emerging market assets. And so we are seeing the bifurcation of returns across global markets, which is something that we've been expecting for some time. And I think everyone has just got so used to the idea of American exceptionalism from an economic growth perspective, from a stock market perspective. It just sort of just goes up in a straight line, and isn't this wonderful? But that's not the case. And I think with the potential damage that's coming to the US economy because of the tariffs, but I think more importantly, the uncertainty that they cause and Trump causes in the US system and the US's role within the world has caused investors to have a think and reassess how much exposure they want to America. And I think this is one of the reasons we've seen the dollar be so weak and equity market returns across the rest of the world have been relatively strong since April.
Indeed. And, you know, looking at US equity markets, they did bounce back from the lows after Liberation Day. And driven, Dan, again, especially in recent weeks, by the Magnificent Seven. Now, when you're looking at the seven stocks, actually, you know, Tesla, Nvidia, Apple, Meta, these technology companies, you know, before we saw the volatility in markets caused by Donald Trump's tariffs, you know, the 2 years before that were very much driven by these seven stocks. And we're starting to see signs of that happening again, and that real concentration of equity gains. How does an investor deal with this going forward? Because of course, if they want to be, you know, catching up with the market and they want to be tracking the market going higher, they have to be in these seven stocks. But there is a risk to that. You know, how do you see that playing out in the second half of the year? Do you see a little bit more dispersion coming in to markets in terms of equity returns, or is this something that is going to be something that continues and does pose a bit of a risk to portfolios that are highly weighted to this sector?
I think it does pose a risk to portfolios with large exposure to America and large sort of passive exposure. The US market makes roughly 70% of the global index, and the Magnificent Seven companies, I believe, make up roughly 30% of the US market. So if you just take a very simple example of someone putting all of their money into an MSCI World tracker or global index, then you've potentially got the best part of 20% of your capital allocated across seven companies, which feels like an awful lot. And granted, these are seven fantastic companies. You know, they have changed the world, and they are changing the world that we live in, but they're trading at rich multiples at a point in the cycle where, you know, markets are at an all-time high, and it feels like there's got a sort of quite a lot of fervor and fever around AI-related stocks. And so I think it does pose a risk for portfolios. And I think this is what we've seen, is that whilst they've bounced back hugely from the liberation sort of tariff lows, they look, you know, they look and feel very expensive with where we are in the market at the moment. And so I think people are starting to reassess the weight they've got in America, the weight they've got to tech, the weight they've got to the Magnificent Seven, and are looking to allocate that elsewhere. But, you know, we like technology, and we've got exposure to technology and to American equities across our portfolios for clients. But it all comes down to diversification and just ensuring you have not got all of your eggs in one basket. I mean, it's investing 101, but I think it's quite easy, can be quite easy for people to forget that when you've just seen such stellar returns from a very small section of the market by sort of number of companies compared to relatively mediocre and pedestrian returns from a lot of other areas of the market. But it is one of the biggest risks I think that we've got in markets at the moment is the valuations of these companies and the concentration risk coupled with Trump's shenanigans, should we say.
Yeah, I think it's a classic case of recency bias. When investors are looking at what's been happening in markets over the last couple of years, there's a tendency to think that will continue, but as we know, these things can snap back pretty quickly. So, and we're going to be discussing actually a little bit later on in the podcast positioning in particular sectors that you look at. For the next up, we're going to look at an event that we have coming up next week, and that is the US trade deadlines on the 9th of July. That could be a risk event. It could cause volatility in the markets in either direction, depending on what's happened. As you touched on, we've had the Vietnamese deal announced overnight. That did spark a rally in US stocks, and we actually saw some strength here in Europe on the back of that. But how are your clients positioning for this? What are you saying to clients with such a potentially volatile event on the horizon? How are you tweaking portfolios ahead of this?
Yeah, we've been fortunate that we've had a number of takeovers in portfolios, and so we've got a little bit of cash lying around, and so we're heading into the summer with elevated cash positions and slightly more in sort of lower risk assets than we would like. And the reason for this is we just expect summer to be volatile. We've got July the 9th deadline, as we mentioned. We'll see what happens with the US-China deal. It sort of seems on, but you know, I think that could turn on a sixpence before the August deadline. Liquidity is also, you know, usually pretty poor in the summer. And then you've just got the general sort of valuation concerns and anything else that comes up. So we expect it to be a volatile summer, and thus we've been keeping some of our powder dry and are eager to put it to work in markets. So I think you're right. I think there will be volatility over the next week especially, but also sort of heading more broadly into August and potentially September as well. And the volatility is inevitable in markets. There's always something to worry about, you know, there just always is, but there is a relatively toxic mix of potential risks that are emerging. And I think given that markets have, you know, talking about the US market specifically here, given that it's recovered all of the gains lost from the tariff trauma and has gone on to reach fresh all-time highs, now doesn't feel like a time to be being too aggressive with your equity market positioning, and especially given the alternatives that are on offer out there. You know, if this was 2021 or 2020 and we were talking about things, then you know, bonds were yielding next to nothing. But now, and granted, we've got the sort of deteriorating fiscal positions of the Western world, but you can go and get 4.5% or 5% on a government bond, or you can go and get a little bit more on a corporate bond. That feels, at this moment of the cycle, with markets where they are, a slightly better bet than being too exposed to equity markets.
That's a very good point, which I think it has been overlooked to some extent with everything that's going on with tariffs, you're still able to go out and, as you say, get 4.5-5% on 10-year debt in the US and the UK, which is something that I think if we see a bit of choppiness that people will be flocking into before long. And, you know, your point about the volatility over the summer, Dan, August, traditionally, if you look back over the last 10 years, we've had some of the most volatile months of the year in August, which actually have proved to be very good buying opportunities. So that cash position there may be put to work, as you mentioned. So just, you know, the final point here on tariffs, and it's really a link through to, you know, inflation and the consequences and your views on what the Fed can do, because it's to some extent out of their hands. You know, there's big pressure on the Federal Reserve to cut interest rates by Donald Trump. But at the same time, he's putting on these tariffs, which naturally is going to increase inflation and of course make their job very difficult if they're looking to cut rates. With what Donald Trump's doing out there, how does this, and what does this mean for the Federal Reserve? Does it mean that their tools and the tools at their disposal were less effective, that they haven't, you know, the credibility of forward guidance that they're putting out there? You know, how did you feel this is going to develop over the year when the Fed's trying to talk to the market and manage expectations of what they're doing? Is that something that you've got quite a close eye on at the moment?
Yeah, I think forward guidance has become a lot trickier since Trump and since the tariffs and that uncertainty over the future trajectory of monetary policy has not been a welcome thing for markets. I still believe that, you know, the tools that the Fed has got in its armory are effective, but for me the more interesting point is the dual mandate that the Fed has. In the UK, clearly, the Bank of England only is targeting inflation. But in America, the Fed has got to achieve both stable prices and maximum sustainable employment. And for me, that becomes challenged with the potential situation we're in now, which is a stagflationary environment. Growth in the US is slowing. Inflation is creeping up and is likely to creep up further in the face of the tariffs. And so it will be interesting to see which of those two objectives the Fed prioritizes. Now, we know Trump wants interest rates down at 1%, and I suspect he'll get that at some point, because he's likely to install his own man in the Fed when Jay Powell's term comes to an end. My gut feeling is that US rates are probably a bit high, but I can understand completely why they have been reluctant to cut in the face of a massive or potentially massive growth and inflationary shock over there. And again, you know, it's quite interesting. We touched on it earlier, the weakness of the dollar we've seen this year. You know, the worst start to the year for the dollar, worst first half of the year, sorry, since 1973. Given how high US interest rates are, one compared to the UK and Europe and other parts of the world, one would have expected a slightly stronger dollar. And so I think it's quite interesting that how weak the dollar has been despite that. That's a very verbose and long-winded answer. I think the Fed have got the right tools. I think forward guidance is less helpful at the moment, but it's the dual objectives they've got which I think they're going to struggle with.
And we're actually recording this as the non-farm payrolls are released, so is that's going to be quite an interesting data point to see what that is and what that means for markets going forward. Because, you know, as we've touched on, there has been some weakness in the US economy, of course, here in Europe, and that jobs number, there's a lot of moving parts in this particular one, but that's going to be a real insight into how the US economy is progressing. And then, of course, there's going to be probably a little bit more pressure on the Federal Reserve to act. So that's going to be quite an interesting story to watch going forward. So we discussed the economy and the macro picture in some detail there, Dan. Thank you very much. We're now going to move on now and start to talk about asset allocation, how you're positioning, sectors that you're looking at. So first up, we'll look at the geographic diversification. You know, we've touched at the on the valuations of US stocks, you know, how expensive they are. So if you're not looking at the US, where else are you looking at the moment?
Well, I was doing a presentation to clients over the last few months, and the point I was making is that basically everywhere looks pretty good value, apart from America at this point. So you know, there really is a wealth of opportunities out there. UK wise, I think when we last spoke, Jonathan, I was banging the drum about investment trusts, and since then the returns have been exceptionally strong, driven by sort of greater takeover activity and discounts narrowing and a bit of sort of corporate activity. But there's still a large part of the investment trust market, notably in sort of growth equity, sort of venture capital and private equity funds. There's also a little bit of value in property, still sort of quite wide discounts, but we've seen a lot of M&A activity in that space. So that's one area we're positive on. FTSE Small Cap and FTSE 250 are trading at ridiculously cheap valuations. Now, some of that's understandable, given the relatively weak growth outlook for the UK at the moment, but trading on very depressed valuations, and we're seeing, you know, a significant amount of M&A activity in that mid 250 space this year. And what you're seeing, which, you know, typically always happens if markets or companies stay too cheap for too long, then private equity or trade buyers will come in and gobble up some, you know, the good assets. So, you know, we saw that the most recent one in the mid 250 was a company called Spectris, wonderful little company worth about £4 billion pounds now. It supplies measuring instruments for sort of research and various industrial applications, but it was trading at about £20 a share in June, and then Advent said hello, we'll, they didn't quite say hello, we'll have some of this, but that's in essence what they said, and offered £37 a share compared to the £20 it was trading at, and KKR this week have offered £40 a share, so they're willing to pay 100% premium in essence compared to the share price, and we're seeing this across small cap land and mid 250 land in the UK, so we're really quite positive on that. And then at the top level of the UK, again, sort of FTSE 100, good defensive, solid industries in a slowing growth world, and again, there've been some pretty strong performers there. So yeah, bullish on the UK. Maybe that, you know, hasn't come across to your listeners quite just yet. Europe, you know, pretty positive on. Though of course, the gains have been relatively solid this year, so we just need the earnings to sort of come through. But positive there. We think emerging markets look pretty good. We've got a small weighting to China, which we quite like on valuation grounds. And just with the fiscal and monetary easing that we're seeing there at the moment, and hopefully some thawing of geopolitical tensions with China. India, we've been long-term bulls on. It's part of our thematic basket. We sort of look at certain themes that we see evolving over the coming decades, and we sort of get exposure to them for clients. So we first invested in India in 2018 purely because we saw that growth was going to be strong and demographics very favorable. So India is again one which we're very positive on. And then, as I said earlier, sort of fixed interest looks pretty good at the moment. We're sort of favouring short-dated corporate and also government bonds, typically gilts, but a little bit of treasuries as well. And then also infrastructure and sort of dividend-yielding infrastructure funds and trusts. So there really is such a, as I said, a wealth of opportunity out there from a global perspective that it's quite exciting. And whilst, you know, this is not me calling to, you know, to say no US exposure or no Mag 7 exposure, but it's everything in moderation and not letting making sure that one doesn't get too emotional about different parts of the portfolio just because Nvidia has gone up, you know, tenfold over the last few years or however much it's gone up by, does not mean it's going to go up by tenfold over the coming years. Mm-hmm. To move from sort of 150 billion company, you know, a number of years ago to a $3 trillion company is quite something, but I strongly suspect that in 5 years' time, when we're having hopefully a similar conversation, Jonathan, Nvidia is not going to be a $30 trillion company. if it is, then, you know, I suppose we're all out of a job, because all we'll be doing is talking about Nvidia and putting everyone's money just 100% into Nvidia. So sorry, I'm rambling now.
No. It's really, it goes back to some of the points you made earlier on in the podcast that, you know, if you see strong gains, you know, this recency bias that I think we're seeing with the Magnificent Seven at the moment, people have seen the gains there and think it's going to continue. But, you know, these things can change pretty quickly. And, you know, you made some really interesting points there about the UK market. Really interesting looking at Spectris that actually traded for a very brief period above the offer price from KKR. So that would suggest that there could be another bid, or the market thinks there could be another offer coming in from Advent. But, you know, it's just one of a long list of companies in the UK that isn't being properly valued by the UK public equity markets. And you're seeing US private companies, you know, or US private equity coming in, picking these stocks up, obviously seeing a lot more value in them than the UK market is prepared to offer. And, you know, listening to you there, Dan, it's quite interesting to get your perspective on stock-specific stories, you know, such as Spectris. But in terms of your investment approach and how you manage your clients' portfolios, are you more sort of bottom-up or top-down? Is there a bit of a mix? I mean, are you stock pickers? Are you going out and picking out individual companies, or are you looking at baskets of funds? Now, how do you construct a portfolio to play into these themes that we've discussed?
Yeah, the majority of our portfolios are collectives, and that tends to be open-ended funds and also investment trusts. But we do invest directly as well in UK equities, predominantly FTSE 350 equities. One's always got to have an eye on the top down and the macro, but we're very much a bottom up house. We will form views on you know, what we think about America and, you know, UK and all of that, and that will lead us to come up with a tactical asset allocation decision. But then the implementation is sort of very much bottom up, more active than passive, though we do use sort of quite a few passives for the implementation of that particular idea. So, you know, as I say, UK sort of from a direct equity perspective, we've, you know, what have we been positive on recently? You know, Melrose is a company that's gone, you know, has been wonderfully successful for investors since 2003 when it listed, going through a bit of turbulence, but you know, we're relatively positive on that. I think Rightmove is very interesting. I mean, we were buying that sort of six seven months ago when it was quite a bit cheaper than it is now. But, you know, it's a wonderful tech company. It's pretty much got a monopoly on what it does. Everyone goes on Rightmove. And it's, you know, whilst it's expensive by UK standards, trading on, you know, the best part of 25 times earnings, you know, for a technology company with, you know, good economic motor, I think it's pretty good as a long-term bet. And then also, you know, we've had some tobacco exposure as well over the last few. We've had it for longer than the last few years, but it's sort of come good in the last few years. You know, you could pick up things like Imperial Brands, because they had to change the name from tobacco because it wasn't politically correct to call your company tobacco anymore. But you could buy, you know, you're buying shares in Imperial Tobacco at sort of £15 a share a few years ago, sort of with a dividend yield of the best part of 10%, trading on sort of 5x earnings. I mean, that's a pretty good place to put your money, to be honest. I mean, the shares have pretty much doubled now. But anyway, again, I'm sort of getting into the weeds on stock specific. So we do a combination of direct and collective approach.
No, that's really interesting. Really interesting insight into some of the names that you've been picking up recently, and of course, ones that have come to fruition. So final point here, really want to focus on emerging market equities and bonds, because this has really been an unloved sector. I was actually at a presentation by a fund manager not too long ago, and, you know, they were showing the relative valuations of emerging markets versus US equities. Of course, you know, the US equities running away themselves has made this metric particularly interesting at this point in time, and really underline the difference in valuations between emerging markets and the US. But if you look across that sector, it's been bouncing around the lows for some time. You know, we have actually seen in recent months a bit of an uptick, particularly in Chinese equities, but still not back to anywhere where they have been. So it'd be good to get your view, Dan, on the emerging market. So are you bullish on this sector? What do you like about it, if so?
Yeah, we are bullish on emerging markets, and we've been running an overweight position for a few years now, which hasn't been, you know, the right call up until recently. They're trading, you know, they've been trading at sort of 50, 60 year relative lows compared to other markets. And generally speaking, you know, emerging markets are growing at a faster clip than developed markets. They don't have the same fiscal constraints that Western governments do. And so it is an area we've been positive on. I mean, China has just been unloved for sort of understandable reasons over the last few years. But just generally, it goes back to the point that everyone has just been pointing towards America and investing that way, and emerging markets have sort of been left behind. The dollar weakness this year has clearly helped, and I think that's, you know, that's what's driving a large part of the rally. But I think, you know, there's legs in this broad emerging markets rally, as I think we're only just getting started in terms of increased diversification amongst global portfolios. And an increased sort of dispersion of returns. So it's an area we're positive on, sort of short to medium term, sort of generally, and a bit of China. Long term, as I mentioned before, very positive on India. We think it's, you know, it's a great economy, and it's got a lot of positive things going for it over the next 10 or 20 years. And so we will be maintaining our exposure there for many years to come.
Thank you. So just one final point, and I suspect listeners may get a sense of an answer to this already. But as a money manager, as a wealth manager, Dan, when you're looking forward to the rest of 2025, what are the things that excite you the most?
I don't know whether I can get excited by the rest of 2025 from a stock market. All I can see is volatility, to be honest with you, Jonathan. What am I excited about? I'm excited about seeing some of those unloved or previously unloved areas of the market that, you know, we've talked about starting to pay, you know, literal or metaphorical dividends, combination of the both, I suppose. There is, especially if, you know, if we delve into the UK market, which I won't, but there are some absolutely fantastic opportunities out there, and they're slowly starting to sort of come round and come good. And so I think there are going to be good returns in a lot of these unloved areas. But what I am nervous about is that macro volatility. That, you know, if how's the old expression go? If America catches a cold, the rest of the world catches the flu. These markets, the other markets apart from American markets, will not be immune to Trump tariff related shocks, to, you know, US growth shocks. But that just means that, you know, given that we've got some, you know, dry powder lying around, we can buy some more of these investments for clients. So I'm excited to see those opportunities come to the fore and start producing bigger gains. But I am nervous about the volatility. I think it may be quite a tricky time. So, you know, as ever, one of the key things when investing is understanding the role that emotion plays, and trying to keep your emotions in check, and, you know, making sure you've got a sensible investment strategy that you stick to, and trying to not let the noise bother you too much, because I think there is going to be a lot of noise for the rest of this year.
That's great. Dan, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Thanks for having me on, Jonathan.
And thank you very much to everyone for listening. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember all investment involves risk.